Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. The so-called collective West is at war with Russia, using Ukraine as a proxy. The West has made it clear it wants a Russia that is weaker and isolated on the world stage. To date, these attempts have ended in failure. In fact, the opposite has happened. The West is weaker and isolated. Crosstalking the West's miscalculations, I'm joined by my guest, John Varoli, in New York. He is a political analyst as well as a former foreign correspondent in Russia. In Washington, we have Michael Maloof. He is a former Pentagon senior security policy analyst. And in Marrakesh, we cross to Martin Jay. He is an award-winning journalist and commentator. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump in anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Let me go to Michael in Washington first. Let me, if you saw from my introduction, I kind of wanted to focus in on Russia, but the news flow is kind of interrupted. This here, China is very much in the news flow. Taiwan. Michael, let's go do a little bit of history. Remember in December, December 17th, the Russians sent a note, a diplomatic note, to NATO and to the United States. They do watch your step. I'm going to borrow some Chinese words. You know, you could get burned with Ukraine. Now let's talk about right now. You know, the Nancy Pelosi, I suppose, as we speak right now, is approaching or maybe even be in Taiwan. And the Chinese warned, don't do this. There'll be consequences. Is there a parallel here, and who's not understanding the world? Go ahead, Michael.
Well, thanks for having me, Peter. There's an extraordinary parallel here. I think the Chinese have learned from the Ukraine lesson. They saw that Mr. Putin, as you pointed out, put down red lines and wanted to negotiate. They were ignored. And now he's done the same thing. Xi Jinping has now done the same thing. He's issued red lines, and he's told them don't cross it or else. And for some unknown reason, our people are so thick-headed, they just cannot get the message. And clearly, this is they don't understand what it's like to have a two-front war going on all of a sudden once again. And in this case, we're not prepared for it whatsoever. We're not even prepared to help Ukrainians very much longer, given how quickly they're going through the logistics. So this whole thing is just total madness. And being August, I'm very, very concerned about a possible war. And historically, wars have occurred in many cases during August. And as you pointed out in our discussion, the guns of August.
The guns of August. Okay, absolutely. Martin, weigh in there in on this here, because the parallel with Ukraine is quite remarkable. Ukraine is a small country, relatively poor, very badly governed. I don't think you can't say anything like that about China. Go ahead.
No, you can't. I mean, in that respect, if you put it that way, you know, you're talking about a David and Goliath situation. You know, we can't afford a war or anything close to anything that resembles a war or a state of war with China. That would just be simply suicide. I think the links between China and Ukraine, though, are the Biden family. And I've written about this extensively. Yes. You know, I think there is a lot of corruption there, a lot of stories that our journalists just simply aren't getting to. And, you know, I can't be the first skeptical commentator to say that I really believe that Biden, who thinks he's going to be really against the ropes come the midterms, is looking for a massive distraction. And, you know, he's certainly not the first U.S. president to look at the globe and see, well, where can we have a dust up somewhere? And, you know, bring all the journalists
but
to
Martin,
that side.
But, Martin, this is China. This is not Panama. This is not Grenada. Let's go to John in New York. Jump in, John.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the one common thread I'm seeing throughout all of this is that the Democrats are the party of chaos. You know, domestically, they were behind the insurrection, the violent insurrection in summer 2020, when our cities burned for 2 months. And now abroad, we see they're the party of chaos. They've ignited this war, reignited this war in Ukraine, and now they're pushing for war in China. So I get the feeling they just want more chaos. More chaos brings them more power, they can justify more contracts, whether it's spending at home or spending for spending for war abroad. So that's the only common thread I see, the party of chaos. Of course, as your other very respectful guest said, The Democrats are also very much interested in provoking China, provoking Russia. I think they do want a two-front war, because this is their moment in history where they are going to teach the other great powers of the world. They're going to teach them a lesson, and they're going to show them who's boss. They think they're boss. The Democrats think they're boss on the planet, and they are promoting their vision, their global vision for a new world order.
Michael, you correct me if I'm wrong here, but, I mean, if the U.S. Seriously is considering some kind of conflict with China, they have to get there by ship, right? I mean, you have to move thousands and thousands on these big aircraft carriers. China's very well prepared for something like that. I mean, I just, Russia and Ukraine, you know, they're right next to each other, okay? That's a land war, okay? This is something very different. Losing three aircraft carriers in 90 minutes is going to be, how's that going to go down? Go ahead, Michael.
Well, it's not going to go down very well.
Except for the aircraft carriers. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, the Chinese have warned you basically that they can knock out those aircraft carriers. And I think that they're prepared to do that. They got a specific type of ballistic missile that will, they're called carrier killers. I think it's the DF-21. And so they also have, they also can introduce into their warfare scheme another thing that we don't even talk about, and that's electromagnetic pulse weaponry. And they practice for that. We do not. And I think that that is something else that they could use against our combat carriers and our ships. By the way, they have a much larger Navy than the United States. And the only way the United States can get there is by ship. And we're coming halfway around the world. And as a consequence, the Chinese just have to lie in wait. And it's because it's their domain, their territory. So this once again shows aggression. I'm very concerned that what you still have people at the top of the State Department in the Biden administration who are the neocons that are calling these shots. They're unrelenting. They want containment both for China and Russia. And as a consequence, we have driven both China and Russia into a much greater military alliance as a consequence.
John in New York, you wanted to jump in. Go ahead.
Yeah, we have military bases in the region, so certainly we have the power to project there quite easily. Of course, we do have to bring a lot by ship, but we already have a lot of military assets in the region, so we could fight a war. Yes, we could fight a war with China. It's going to be extremely destructive, but we could fight it in the region.
Well, I don't know that Japan and the other countries that and South Korea that. Host our bases want to get involved in a war in China.
Well, that's a really good point. Let me go to Martin right now. The entangling alliances the U.S. has, which is inherently dangerous. You know, if there's an attack on Japan, then that's one thing. If there's an attack on Australia, that's another thing. But Taiwan is a very different thing, because even the U.S. recognizes that Taiwan is part of China. That is the very basis of establishing diplomatic relations back in 79. Martin, go ahead.
Yeah, which is why I don't think they're gunning for war. I'll stand aside to with your other commentators. I think they're looking for a state of emergency. And I think this is going to be a huge public relations exercise
that's what the U.S. and these hotheads want. The Chinese may react very, very differently to that, don't you think?
Yes. And it's always the great danger. There's always the great danger in Ukraine and with Russia, and the great danger with China is miscalculation. You know, how much confidence do you place in the Biden administration to not...
The miscalculation is great because you also have the Chinese wanting, they're going to have their Communist Party big brouhaha coming up, and Xi Jinping needs to get reelected for a third term. So he's definitely going to take a very hard stand.
I think this thing is going to happen over a few weeks, and I actually believe, being British, I believe that the Americans are also waiting for Liz Truss to be voted in as Conservative leader sometime in September. She's very gung-ho on China, foolishly. She really believes that we can really take a belligerent, very bellicose attitude militarily with the Chinese, which is hilarious, frankly.
Yeah.
But I think, I wonder if this is all something which has been planned over several weeks and several months. You mentioned earlier about wars in the summer. You know, as a journalist, I always find it somewhat ironic, somewhat amusing that so many wars are planned over the summer. And if you've ever wondered why, here's my theory. I think they're planned during summer because they get maximum press coverage, because all the parliaments around the world shut down during most of August until the first or second week of September. So there's lots of space in the newspapers for stories for the political correspondents.
Before we go to the break, let me go to John in New York. I mean, this is another elite agenda here. Ukraine has been a manufactured elite agenda. We all have to care about Ukraine, even though most people don't, okay? And now the same thing here with China. And what's really bizarre for me is that this is Nancy Pelosi's farewell tour. She's saying goodbye. She's been traveling a lot lately, you know, when she has time off from January 6th, okay? But, I mean, she's saying goodbye, and the Biden administration is not on the same page with the House. I've never seen such a hatch-up in my life. Go ahead, John.
Yeah, I mean, this situation, the American political Olympus reminds me of the Soviet political Olympus in the early 80s.
Yep.
This gerontocracy, you know, people very, very old who were really not aware of what was happening in their country or in the wider world. So it's maybe this whole problem. I mean, to a large extent, I think they're working with the wrong information, because specifically about Ukraine, I had a conversation recently with people who are pro-Ukrainian for the war in Ukraine, and they really believe that, oh, if we just fight a little bit longer, Russia will collapse, because Russia is inherently weak. Russia is the giant with the feet of clay. They really believe that. So they're working with false information. And I wonder what information the White House and congressional leaders are working with regarding China. Maybe it's something similar. Maybe they think China is weak. Now is the moment to strike. Let's push them. Let's humiliate them. Let's show them who's boss. Yeah. Or maybe these people are just absolutely incompetent.
All right, I'm going to jump in here, gentlemen. We're going to go to a short break. And after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on the West's miscalculation. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing the West's miscalculations. Okay, let's go back to Michael in Washington. The unipolar moment just didn't last long enough, apparently, for these neocons here. And I've been thinking for a very long time, watching what happened with Libya, what happened with Syria, now with Ukraine, and maybe on the menu is now China, is that the unipolar moment and hegemony, it's dissipating for the United States. Do you think it's possible that they're seeing this is at a certain juncture where Russia's very preoccupied, obviously, with Ukraine, and the Chinese, they only see them getting stronger and stronger and stronger. It's the Thucydides trap, and the U.S. could possibly think we'd have to take them on now, or at least intimidate them. Does that make sense to you? Go ahead, Michael.
Yeah, I think the neocons in the Biden administration see this as their last desperate effort to contain both Russia, China. They see that this is the grandstand, last grandstand, to preserve their unipolar world order, because they see this multipolar world order emerging, and it's emerging very rapidly. And I might add, it's accelerating because of actions by the United States itself through the weaponization of sanctions against everybody out there these days, it seems, even against our allies and their companies. So it's turning the world into a whole different world that we knew just a few years ago. And as a consequence, this multipolar world order now is beginning to accelerate. For example, the BRICS countries, they're going to be getting new members here shortly. I was just informed this morning by a very reliable source that some of the Arab countries now want to join BRICS. That's quite significant, and that's in addition to Saudi Arabia. And by BRICS, I mean Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa. They, you know, when you bring those countries together, they constitute more than half the population of the world.
Yep.
And that's the emerging multipolar world order the United States now sees itself competing against, economically and politically and militarily.
Well, and Martin, is this a complete lack of trust and faith in the West anymore? I mean, using the dollar as a weapon, I mean, it's one of the stupidest things I've seen in my lifetime. I mean, you should cherish that as the global fiat currency. But no, they denigrate it. People don't want it. Why get involved in these institutions where you could be held hostage here? Look what they did to Venezuela's gold, for goodness sake, all right? It seems to me that China has learned very rapidly what the West, under the leadership of the U.S., will do in the case of Ukraine. And China's learned what to do and what not to do, and they're prepared. One thing I will say, the Russians were prepared for what had happened in Ukraine, and I truly believe the Chinese are prepared. I don't see anybody in Washington other than bluster being prepared. Go ahead, Martin.
Yeah, I think the Chinese are preparing, and they have been prepared for a long time because they've seen from the offset that this relationship between the West and China has its limits. I mean, the West can't decide whether it wants to make China a massive trading partner or a geopolitical enemy or a mix of the two. You know, there's a lot of confusion there. But I think as more and more, as this trade deficit with America broadens and China sells much, much more trade and its goods in America, America exports to China, that's going to obviously become a problem at a certain point. What they mentioned before, BRICS, is very relevant. What we're seeing is China having much more confidence now as these countries are starting to line up to join BRICS, so that, you know, if there is ever such a threat to China, the big question is, would China even stand alone, or would other countries quickly rush to its defense in the region as well, such as Iran, for example, which has massive military capability? So I think the world is changing, you know, and we're living in a new age where America and the West has to accept that there's a new world order emerging, and it's from the East. And it's, you know, it's our own fault. We've insisted on creating this new Iron Curtain, which is going up. And if you look at around the world, you'll see that, more importantly, in my view, there's a number of non-aligned countries, countries in the old days in the Cold War who were forced more or less by the West to sign up to Western hegemony. A lot of countries in Africa, for example, that had former European colonial masters. These days, those countries in Africa don't follow what the West tells them to do anymore. You know, it's very, very interesting. At the beginning of the Ukraine war, we saw something like 35 countries abstained at the a vote to basically kick Russia. And 16 of those countries were African countries. Another six didn't even vote at all. So that was a very, very clear indication right from the offset that the world is changing. And a lot of these African countries will stay non-aligned because they believe that this new world order is they're not going to get tricked by it again. They're not going to be forced into a position where they have to choose one side or the other. They want to stay neutral. But I think many of them, when they see what's going on with the West and China, will start also to look at ways of how they can impress BRICS and sign up to become members of BRICS as well. So the East is growing, and everything the West does just seems to be like shooting itself in the foot every minute. You know, it's incredible how
This really is an historic moment here, John. Because there's a continue on what Martin was saying here. The West cannot accept that the world is changing in ways that they can't control, and that is really the dilemma right now. I mean, you look at Joseph Borrell's blog. I mean, he's just a madman. He has no idea what's going on in the world, and he's running the EU's foreign policy. Liz Truss, I mean, she couldn't fight her way out of a paper bag, okay? And then you have, you know, Joe Biden, the king of them all. I mean, and the world is changing at a rapid pace, and they have no comprehension of it. And that's what makes them truly dangerous. Go ahead, John.
What does the West have to offer the world?
There you go.
It's war and destruction.
There you go.
Let's look at the past 20 years. It's been war and destruction. Iraq, Libya, Syria, Afghanistan. What is the main organization for the collective West? It's NATO. It's a military alliance. What's the main organization, let's say, for the other side? It's BRICS. It's an economic development organization. So we see on one side is a highly militaristic, dangerous organization, civilization, the West, run, as you said, by very old and unhinged people on one side. On the other side is a bloc that wants economic development to respect national sovereignty, and to foster mutual beneficial economic relations. So now if I'm a non-aligned country, who am I going to choose? The unhinged militarists or the side that wants economic development and national sovereignty?
John, you should be very careful with your words, John, because you're going to be canceled very, very quickly for talking pragmatic sense, okay? Sovereignty. Oh, my God, I haven't heard that on the mainstream media for decades now. But that's exactly, Michael, that's really what's going on here, is that it's a world, and then there's a literature on it, the world beyond the West. And not only was it a literature 20 years ago, it's a reality now. And that is something Europe and the Americans and their friends in NATO world and like Japan and Australia, et cetera, they can't seem to find how they can fit into it. I mean, we had the UK coming out, you know, they're going to be definitely, you know, I'm sorry, it was a German chancellor, what I refer to as Sergeant Schultz, condemning China and supporting Taiwan. I mean, no surprise there.
No, and I can tell you that I saw this when I was at the Defense Department when Central Asia first opened up. It was like a whole new world, a whole new universe out there that I had never known about, and that was that constituted the East, the East, the Eurasia accent here that we have is something that. The West has no concept of, and we're seeing that today. I might add that in addition to BRICS, we're also seeing the Belt and Road Initiative that has begun to spawn, and now it's reaching into Latin America, it's into Africa, it's all across Eurasia, and that combined with the Eurasia Economic Union, BRICS, Belt and Road, I mean, that's formidable. Economic engine that the United States now is very, very concerned about and finds very threatening. And that's what they can't go up against.
But Michael, the juxtaposition is they just want more bases around the world. I mean, we could take Africa, for example. You know, the U.S. Sure. solves its problem by building, you know, bases. You know, the Chinese, economic development. Now, we can argue and debate that what kind of economic development, but they're far more interested in prosperity, becoming rich. Let me go back to Martin in Marrakesh. You know, that's what the West stood for, security, dignity, the rule of law, prosperity. All of those are going away right in front of our eyes. So what kind of model is it for anyone in the world now? Go ahead in Marrakesh.
But did they really stand for those values? I mean, perhaps they did. There was a tiny moment, perhaps, in the early 60s when most of those countries in Africa became independent and they clung on to the relationships they had with their colonial masters. But I'm not sure if any of these values mean anything anymore to these countries. You know, I mean, when the African leaders often complain that when the EU comes to visit them, the EU gives a speech about human rights. When China comes to visit them, it opens schools and hospitals. And I think that's really basically how to sum it up. You know, most of these countries are looking to China now to be the new lead, to invest money, you know, something like $3 billion of foreign investment just last year in the African continent from China. That's pretty impressive. It doesn't sound like a lot, but it's much less than the Americans. You know, so China is really the real player in Africa now. And I think this is going to be a real determination, a tipping point now in this new world order that we're talking about.
Let me finish off with John. We're almost out of time. John, do you think the Chinese are afraid of a woke Pentagon?
No, not at all. I'm sure they welcome it very much so. I do not think the U.S. is unable to fight a war with China. We will lose. We do not have, we might have the technology in the armaments, in the weapons. We do not have the will. We do not have the minds. We do not have the brilliance like we used to have. We will lose.
And John, you know, where is public opinion here? Again, another major conflict. Nobody's consulted. No, there's no debate. There's just an elite debate on the networks, and that's it. Cable, and that's all the debate. And people, we be going into a major conflict, and no one consulted the people. And they say the debate is between autocracy and democracy. It's rubbish here. Gentlemen, that's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Washington, New York, and in Marrakesh. I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, crosstalk rules.